podcast listeners and wrestling fans. This episode of Back Points is brought to you by DedicatedFew.com, bringing you the foam finger for wrestling. As always, foam finger for wrestling, big plastic ear. You can place it over top of your ear. All right? Every sport has some sort of promotional item that can be directly connected to their sport, and now wrestling has one as well. DedicatedView.com is the website. These guys are the best. They're doing everything they can to help save Olympic wrestling in 2020. You know, I don't want to release their plans before they do, but I would definitely check out and see if they have some promotional items here in the future. But in the meantime, if you're still looking for some way to raise some money for your school or for your promotion, or if you still have a national tournament you want to bring your kids to, your high school kids, or if you want to support that college team coming up in NCAAs, ACCs, Big Tens, Big 12s, EIWAs, go to DedicatedFew.com and enter the term BackPoints. Once you do, you get yourself a nice pair of plastic ears, and you can personalize them any way you want. You can put, you know, Kyle Dake's name on the back, David Taylor, the Magic Man, Penn State, Cornell, Iowa, Minnesota, whatever colors and shapes, or, well, the shape's decided. It's a cauliflower ear. But whatever colors you want, go ahead, go to DedicatedFew.com, put the names, put the colors in, put your order in, okay? It's never been more important to support the people who support wrestling media, okay? We're here because we have fans, and one of the reasons we're able to do this every week is because of our great sponsors over at DedicatedFew.com. So if you like the show, if you love the show, go check out DedicatedFew.com, enter the term BackPoints, and see what kind of special deals you can unlock, okay? Really great guys. Definitely worth checking out the site. Definitely worth seeing if you want to get some cauliflower ears for nationals. And if you are, send us a photo. We'll go ahead and put you guys up on the Tumblr page, backpoints.tumblr.com. All right, guys. Another episode of Back Points coming your way
now. He doesn't want to cut a pound. His body won't let him cut a pound. Well, then you better win the tournament, okay?
That's BS. That's bull crap.
He's got some... big balls, man.
You zip your lip, you shut your mouth, and you open your ears. That's how you win. That's how you get better.
Win, you live, lose, you die.
Okay, guys, we're joined today by Andy Rovat. Andy, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And from what I understand, you're just about to pack your bags and go to Iran.
Yep. We leave for Tehran tonight at 12:30.
Oy. How's that feeling for you? You excited? You nervous? Did you see?
Super excited. I mean, this is probably the biggest World Cup in the sport's history. You know, it's probably the biggest event in the history of our sport, you know, under the circumstances.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, you got named the World Cup coach. It's a big honor. Congratulations. And you and Zeke will be out there competing with some, obviously coaching a team of how many guys?
We have two guys at every weight class.
Okay.
So we have 14 guys with us.
Okay. And have you competed in Iran before?
I have, yeah. I've been to Tehran for the Takhti Cup and then Bandar Abbas for the Takhti Cup as well.
What's your impression? How do you like the country? I hear good things.
I love it. Tehran's a big city. It's big population, big land-wise. But you know, the wrestling fans are, you know, second to none. And you know, with the news that the International Olympic Committee dropping wrestling, you know, their fans are going to be irate. They're going to be more passionate than ever. You know, and, you know, their media is going to use this as a tool to, you know, show the IOC that wrestling matters. So it's going to be a huge event, and, you know, our guys are ready, but I don't think any of us are ready for what's going to hit us when we get there.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot of passion involved in the event, I'm sure. What is, you know, so sort of what is your take currently on what needs to be done in order to improve the position at the IOC? Obviously, Martinetti's gone, not a day too soon. Obviously we have an interim president, and then Stan's going to be the co-executive. What else do you think needs to be done in the immediate future to sort of secure our position against the IOC. And then also on that note, as you mentioned, you know, I think it's been an we'll get to this in a second, but it's been an incredible media response from those people who aren't even wrestlers. I mean, just I think you get 100% return rate basically on media personalities and individuals with opinions who matter who have come out against the decision. So first, though, you know, what do you see that needs to be done as far as on a worldwide scale to make sure that we can do something to oppose the IOC's decision?
Well, you know, I was just on the phone with Tommy Rollins, and, you know, and he's one of the leaders back home who's going to help lead the charge, you know, to lobby the IOC members and lobby the executive committee of the IOC. You know, Tommy's a real sharp guy, and, you know, he's definitely one of the leaders in the sport in our country, and, you know, one day, you know, maybe one of the leaders in the sport worldwide. But, you know, him and I would just had the conversation, and, you know, obviously all the leadership in FILA, you know, has to go. You know, it's from the top, and Martinetti is out, which everybody's well aware of. But, you know, in order for the sport to move forward, you know, the biggest time right now, and obviously, you know, we have to, you know, get the media's attention. We have to start lobbying. But we have to look at ourselves and you know, we're going to have to review the rules. And, you know, all the nations are going to have to come together and pick a competent board, you know, for FILA moving forward. You know, myself and Tommy, we both agreed that, you know, people like myself and, you know, people like Zeke and, you know, a lot of the Eastern European coaches and a lot of the Eastern European executives in their position, well, maybe not the executives, but, you know, but the people in the coaching, the people at the heart and the pulse of the wrestling community, you know, they don't want to get involved with the politics. They don't want to get involved with rule changes. They don't want to get involved with anything. You know, we as coaches and athletes, we just want to wrestle. And, you know, what we do for a living every day, you know, we do it hard. And, you know, I'm overseas all the time and I'm traveling all the time. And the last thing I want to do is have to go sit down and do rule meetings or, you know, be on conference calls for this or do that. You know, we just want to stay focused. So,
I mean, but isn't that part of the problem? I mean, isn't that part of the problem with the IOC and the FILA in general is that basically the people who assume these positions at the IOC and at the FILA, these are independently wealthy individuals who can afford to do all the travel that's necessary to be on these committees. I mean, they're not necessarily subsidized by the USOC completely. I mean, obviously Stan, you know, our co-executive director made his money years and years ago, and Martinetti is just one of those kind of Western European guys who just, you know, just born that way. And, you know, I think we see the same at the IOC. So how do we correct that? How do we get people in front of this ilk of individuals who are making the decision at the IOC, people who are intelligent, passionate, and have the time and resources to, I mean, it's a delicate stew, isn't it? I mean, who do you select to get out there and do these meetings?
Well, I mean, I know who I would select. You know, we got some very, very good people. You know, I don't really want to say names right now because, you know, you have to protect people involved. You know, other people have jobs already, but you can't go speculating, you know, who should be the FILA president. But I know who I would pick, you know, as the next FILA president. And, you know, whether or not the Europeans like it or not, you know, these people that have been in America, we have education. You know, we have degrees from, you know, some of the top universities in the world. And, you know, we have some people that have been super successful, you know, not just in college wrestling, but in international wrestling that have also been very successful in the business world. And, you know, these are the people that right now that we're looking towards leadership. And hopefully, you know, they rise to the occasion and, you know, show what they're made of. But these people, they don't, you know, they can't just go and lead in a position where they're just, you know, dictating like the last, you know, regime at FILA did. You know, if you didn't agree with FILA and, you know, you wanted to stand up against it, you know, you got penalized for it, you know, which is just a bunch of BS, you know. You know, but, you know, I know what the vote was to get Martinetti out. And to me, to be told what the number was, I couldn't believe it was that close.
So it was a close. It was even a close bet just to get Martinetti out in the first place.
It was a one vote it was 11-10.
Holy shit.
People know that, but whoever's voting to keep Martinetti in is obviously not an educated human being. You know, they don't understand the consequences of what just happened. You know, so we have to do a better job getting the leadership involved, and then also, you know, keeping that leadership involved in the sport. You know, some of these FILA people, they go to the tournaments and they don't even show up. They have a big front stage, and you know, they show up late and they show up to the finals, and to them it's more about, you know, going to these tournaments and having a good time and, you know, drinking their vodka. Obviously you got to lead by example, and you got to be the first one at that tournament, and you got to be there, you know, greeting the athletes, and you know, you got it's a big job and it's a big commitment, but the people that are going to be the leaders of the sport in the future are going to have a pulse on, you know, what's good for the sport and how to improve the sport continually without, so we're not put in this situation again.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, you know, the way that I understand it, we're sort of looking at three outs, if I'm not mistaken. We can, at the meeting in May, is that correct? Is it in May?
Yeah, I believe so.
In St. Petersburg. And then there's a meeting in, I believe, Argentina, the full meeting. Yeah. I can't remember.
In September.
Okay. So there's either two or three ways out. And one of the, probably the most powerful way for us to be included in the 2020 games and continuing forward, from my understanding of everything that I've read, is that you can, that the full committee or that the full IOC votes down the idea of having 25 core sports, which as an aside, it should be stated that 25 is a completely made up number. And that
everything the IOC does is made up. It's their own rules.
Right. Bureaucracy begets bureaucracy and power. I mean, if they don't create these sort of guidelines for themselves, they'll literally have nothing to do. So that's one of the things that's I think that's probably, in my opinion, worldwide outrage. IOC looks at it from a PR standpoint, says, do we want 177 members? Say, do we want 15 people, and probably when you break it down into the actual vote of who voted out wrestling, talking about 5-6 individuals directing our PR. I mean, IOC's PR couldn't be worse as it is. And then they went and did the dumbest thing they possibly could have done. So,
well, I mean, I just wrote a new blog for Cliff Keen and our wrestling club today. And, you know, I pointed that out. I said, you know, the IOC, you know, they're supposed to be the head of all the Olympics, and they were dumb enough to come out with this statement a week and a half before the World Cup in Tehran, Iran.
Yeah.
If they're too stupid to realize that wrestling is the national sport of Iran, and that all the top 10 countries in the world are going to Iran for the World Cup, and that we're going to pull together the sport, well, then I say we have to turn the tides. We have to do what we just did to the FILA. You know, we have to get. You know, the Russian Olympic Committee was the first one to come out against the IOC's decision. The United States Olympic Committee doesn't have the courage to stand up to the International Olympic Committee because they're scared what the ramifications are if they go against what the IOC says.
Well, I mean, they don't have any bids in. What are they scared of?
What do you mean? What are they scared of? They're scared of everything.
But I'm saying they don't have any bids in. Like, I see Tokyo 2020, Turkey.
They have any bids in. They have a vested interest in making money. You know, and they're scared. The USOC is scared. And this goes back to what I talked to you, over email a couple weeks ago, what I got in trouble for on Twitter, which, you know, I'm not going to go there right now.
Yeah.
But it's just a mismanagement of resources. It's a mismanagement of, people's time. And, we need to, you know, I think our that most people aren't looking at is that, you know, we have to get these nations where wrestling is a big sport. You know, we have to go to India. Most of their medals have been coming from wrestling recently, you know, and they've been putting a lot of money into it. Azerbaijan, you know, they have a facility here with 14 mats. You know, wrestling is a national sport here. Iran, Russia, Cuba, USA. We have all these backings, and we have influences on our own Olympic Committee. And if all the Olympic committees do what we did to FILA, and we show that we give them a vote of no confidence, how should these Olympic committee people have their jobs still, with the International Olympic Committee? You know, we need to get all these, you know, national governing bodies and the, you know, USOCs of the world to stand up and be like, look, this is not going to happen.
I mean, you're exactly right. I think at the root of it, you're still going to face, you know, Western European countries with sort of, you know, they have little posits that maybe wrestling is something that's, you know, antiquated or that it's otherwise unprofitable. But I think the majority of the decisions, obviously, you're going to get all of the Olympic committees from Central Asia are going to come out against it. I don't think that's really an issue. I think what the big ones are going to be is in China. I mean, getting China to speak up is obviously going to...
China will speak up against it. You know, yeah. China loves the Olympics. You know, they put a lot of funding into the Olympics. You know, they don't want to see a sport like wrestling die.
Yeah.
You know, they have an up-and-coming female Olympic team. They're very successful at the women's wrestling. You know, but I mean, right now they don't have a men's team to speak of, but, you know, it doesn't mean, I mean, I know what they're paying their coach now. You know, I wanted to apply for that position. Obviously I have no credentials and I just retired, but you know, from what I hear, China's paying their head wrestling coach $30,000 a month.
How much a month?
$30,000 a month.
I was just out there watching their, maybe it was last year. I was out there at the facility for a few days watching their women compete. And the coach that they had at the time was a strict human being. And I don't think I've ever seen someone get chewed out like they chew out some other women. But also, like you were mentioning with the funding from some of these other big countries like India, like, you know, I was there a few days ago. And one of the things that, you know, I got from talking with Sushil and those guys, I was like, this is a large cultural thing for them. This is the first time in their country's history where they can actually compete in a sport at the Olympic level. And by God, it's also something physical. I mean, we're talking about Indians who traditionally are fighting the stereotype of being like stick figures and the whole thing. That's a whole country beefing up on protein shakes because Sushil Kumar looks like a stud on the mat. Trust me, everybody's on protein shakes. And one of the things that they want to do is, like, from man to man, woman to woman, they want to just compete at the international level. And for them to lose this opportunity would be heartbreaking, I think, for the individuals that I met, but also for the country as a whole, not to be able to compete at the international level. Like, there's a little bit of pride that comes from winning a medal in shooting. There's a whole different level of pride from saying that, like, we sent out our best gladiator. The Indians sent out our best gladiator against the Iranians, and we won. Yeah, that's, you know, that's something to hang your hat on, you know?
I mean, you could look at it that way throughout the whole globe.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not people have resources to train full time or not, you know, there's people all over the globe. And I mean, we've seen the numbers with 71 different countries represented in the London Games, 26 medalists, 26 people won medals from different countries. And, you know, we don't want to beat up on other sports. Modern pentathlon only had people from 21 different countries enter. We had more medalists than they had entered. So, I mean, it's a big, big thing. And you know, one of the biggest things, I think as an American that we can do is, you know, really, really, you know, I said it in my first blog I wrote a couple of days when we got here, is that we live in a folk style bubble. You know, we put our NCAA champions on a pedestal. You know, like, we believe our NCAA champions are the best wrestlers out there. But you know what? They're not even close to being the best wrestlers out there. Whether it's freestyle or folk style or any style, still not the best wrestlers out there. And, you know, we have to think bigger and we have to think more globally. And, you know, we have to take the people like Jordan Burroughs and Jake Barner, you know, we have to make them national heroes. You know, every little kid needs to know who these people are. You know, every little wrestler has to know who these people are. And, you know, for us as a sport, we're almost too big, you know, to have the means to do this because we don't have the media outlets that, you know, say some of the other sports have in America, like basketball, baseball, football. But we have the numbers in participation. We have the numbers in participation in high school. We have the numbers of participation in college. You know, the NCAA championship is what, the third or fourth highest attended championship at the NCAA level, you know, behind men's basketball. You know, we as a sport do have the numbers. But in America, you know, we have to get outside this bubble and we got to start focusing on the Olympics because I'll tell you what, and I've told people this for years, if we don't have wrestling in the Olympics, everybody who's so high on folk style and who wants to talk down on freestyle and say this and that about it, Well, they're hurting themselves because once wrestling is dropped from the Olympics, every athletic director out there has one more excuse to drop college wrestling. And it, once we start dropping college wrestling, it's going to take opportunities away from kids. You know, there's not going to be nothing.
I think what you're making a powerful point. I think that what we're facing right now is the idea that what's happening with freestyle and Greco at the Olympic level will help. I think it'll help unify the community. I think it'll get the message out there to broader community about how important it is. I don't necessarily think that American freestyle is suffering greatly right now. I think we're still in a position where we can be powerful. And though I do agree that we do have a folk style obsession, I don't necessarily think it's a terrible thing. I think what we need to keep doing is keep working on our media distribution within our own community and elevating the champions we have within those communities,
it's not a terrible thing that we're infatuated with our folk style wrestling. I mean, India, and you know, I read somewhere recently that Turkish oil wrestling has the longest running championship.
It's the longest consecutively competed athletic event in the history of the world. 667 years.
And you see some of this stuff. And, you know, I've watched folk style wrestling across the globe on the internet because I think it's cool. You know, I've seen some African countries where they're playing Islamic music in the back and the crowds are going crazy and they're wrestling on sawdust. You know, it doesn't matter where you wrestle, but these people in Africa, they're national heroes. You know, we as a sport need to do a better job supporting the people that have made it to the pinnacle of our sport. Jordan Burroughs, you know, he makes a lot of money, but he should be making more money. You know, he should be famous. And the fact that he's not is hurting our sport. And it goes right back to the United States Olympic Committee. Why are they not speaking out? Because we don't have famous people. We don't have, you know, they look at us like, God, you guys win the Olympics. It's great. But, you know, like, you don't have your general audience worshiping you. You know, like, Russia, these people are worshipped. Azerbaijan, these people are worshipped. You know, wrestling is really, you know, I mean, it's the most pure sport there is. You know, there's nothing.
Well, I mean, what you're saying basically is, you know, it all sort of boils down to this attention economy. Like, when we talk about outlets for media outlets, we're talking about ESPN, Sports Illustrated, and then even to an extent, like, the large corporations that work on, you know, whether it's CBS Sports or Fox Sports or even CNN. And one of the things that is nice about living in this large economy where there's lots of opportunity for people to progress is you do have a skewed vision of, I mean, we have football that just sort of absorbs a lot of the attention from other sports.
But look at the NCAA championships. The way the NCAA championships are now, they host them live and they host them from the quarterfinals on.
We host all of them now.
Okay, well, every round is live on TV, and they obviously do it because they have the viewership and they have people committed to watching it. But that obviously is the, you know, the NCAA. The only good thing about the NCAA is that our championships are held the week or 2 weeks after almost every high school state tournament. You know, so people are free. You know, what we do is, you know, like other sports, you know. We do shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, football, they have high school football Friday, college football Saturday, pro football Sunday. You know, college wrestling, high school wrestling, youth wrestling, we all wrestle on the exact same days, the exact same season, all season long. And when people point and say, well, there's nobody in the stands, well, obviously there's nobody in the stands because every one of our fans, a million plus wrestlers, plus a million plus parents and a million plus grandparents, well, they're obviously at wrestling events, but they're spread out so far across the country.
That's a good point. I mean, you're talking about live viewership. I mean, all this stuff, I think, is all good points. I don't think that they're antiquated at all quite yet, but I think at the same time, they are all improving. I mean, you know, we're getting sellouts at more college stadiums or college dual meets. We're doing certain things. We're not perfect at the folk style level, and I think we're going to keep improving, trying to find an audience for our international style. I think one of the things that could help us internationally is if we could expand or we can get more of the matches accessible, you know, obviously like with, you know, through Flow or even the mat, just having them just a little bit more user-friendly, finding ways to get them in front of the eyes of everybody. But I think you're right. I mean, I think it's hard to follow when you're cutting weight or your family's invested in your cutting weight or your tournament or your season. It's hard for them to think outside and say, hey, what's going on in the freestyle season? Or hey, what's going on at the high school level? I mean, in some ways, we're really delineated by into our little packs. You know, we can find separation so easily if it's crosstown rivals or whatever, but we have trouble sometimes realizing that it's our connectivity that's our power. And I think you're exactly right that we need to find ways to explore that and promote it.
Yeah, you know, and another thing that I think as a sport we're lacking is showmanship. You know, like, you know, not so much for the athletes, but you know, you go to the Euregan tournament, or you go to, you know, this small little tournament in Yakutsk, Russia, or you go to the Medved tournament. You know, we wrestle the tournament, but they have, you know, maybe a tournament's 2 days. They have opening ceremonies on the first day, closing ceremonies on the second day. They have people who come and sing. They have people who come and dance. They have entertainment in between matches.
Yeah.
You know, we could do that at the college level. We could do that at the high school level. We could do that at the international level. But Americans are, especially wrestling fans, are so against change and so against, like, anything outside the box. They see this and, like, well, that's just silly. I'm here to watch a wrestling tournament. Why would I want to watch dancing? Why would I want to watch entertaining?
You mentioned change, and you mentioned earlier about rules. Which of the rules do you think that the IOC or that FILA needs to maybe introduce in freestyle, especially? Or what do you think is most likely to occur in that circumstance?
Well, a lot of people are against the push out rule, but I think it's a great rule. You know, to me, when I watch college wrestling and you see people play the edge, and you see people go out of bounds nonstop, well, that's boring, and that adds time to the match that shouldn't happen. You know, when I was competing, I'm a grown man. I'm not going to let somebody push me out of bounds because that's the rule, right? You know, if somebody pushes me out of bounds, shame on me. They get a point.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad rule. I think that's a great rule. What needs to happen is the matches need to get longer. Especially on the Greco-Roman side, you know, if they're going to save Greco, they need to go to like a 9-minute match like they had in the 70s. You know, and this is one of the talking points that myself and Tommy Rollins were talking about. You know, obviously college wrestling fans and the Iowa fans especially, you know, they love it when another man takes somebody past their breaking point and wipes the mat up with them.
Oh, so you're saying if you extend the amount of time, then you're going to get a lot of highlights those last 4 minutes, 5 minutes, or possibly that the match will end at the 6-minute mark because they're going to compete, get tired, and people are going to start giving up positions easier?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the 70s. I mean, Euregan beat Hellickson in the Olympic finals, and he was winning by like 13, 14 points. He started getting tired. Hellickson was coming back. But, I mean, you start seeing swings and momentum changes. You can't get that in a 2-minute match. You know, why do people like soccer? Because, you know, as a true soccer fan, like I'm not, but I know people who are, and they appreciate a soccer game where you have so much momentum and you're going, and then maybe the next 20 minutes the momentum shifts, you know, and then the other team starts going. You know, you have to have those shifts, and you have to give the fans something to cheer about. You know, in a 4-minute match, that's just not going
to
happen.
But I would, again, like, I think this is probably what you intended to say too, and maybe you did say it, is this would be best, I think, as a format for Greco. I think for freestyle, I think one of the things I do like is how quick it is. I think I like the idea of like, oh shit, I got to score at the end of the period, you know, because I'm down a point. You know, it creates more aggression because it's so much more open than Greco. Obviously, there's more opportunities to score. There's more places to score. With Greco, I think it's just these two people are stymieing each other with, like, basically, you know, so few options for attacks. So would you want to see that in freestyle too? Like a 9-minute match in freestyle? Like back in the day?
I mean, you could raise it. You know, I mean, it could go back to 6 minutes. It could go to 9 minutes. You know, right now, I think the international wrestling community would be willing to make a change and to go back to that. You know, here in the U.S., everyone says, you know, they would never go back to a 9-minute match. They want to make the match shorter because, you know, they don't want to put the work in. Let me tell you, I trained overseas, and Russians train just as hard as Americans. And, you know, maybe they train in a little different intensity, but they train hard. And they would come to compete if the matches were 9 minutes. You know, and another aspect of that is, you know, maybe you're not going to get the most viewerships during the day, but I'll tell you what, in the finals, you know, we could get our viewership and, you know, you could put that on TV and people will watch it, but we need to be able to have tournaments like we had in the 80s and 90s where you get more matches in. You know, there's no reason why, like, you know, somebody like Chase Pammy or, you know, goes to Euregan in January and he loses in the first round and he's done. You know, that's a waste of resources. That's a waste of his time. You know, and for the FILA people to think that's a good idea, I mean, that's just terrible. You know, go back to a pool system. Go back to where you got to be the biggest man out there and you got to win this wrestling tournament by going through 6, 7, 8 guys.
Yeah. You know, well, I think that's good. I mean, even if you did that, I mean, you could even do that for these. Even if you want to change it at the Olympic level, maybe you could change the qualifying tournaments into something like that. I mean, I'm sure there needs to be some sort of across the board. It needs to be sort of similar. But I think the bigger point you just made is that if Chase Pammy climbs his way all the way over to Russia, takes all these flights, eats all this food, trains as hard, and then gets to wrestle for 6 minutes, it's kind of crap that he doesn't get the opportunity. I mean, maybe he doesn't even get the opportunity to wrestle back for first place, but at least give him the opportunity to get some more matches of meaning. It'll improve the sport and his trip.
Yeah, I mean, I think two of those things are, you know, two of the biggest things that would help improve the sport.
So what's going to happen next? Well, you know, right now we're looking at it. It's Monday. It's the 18th. Of February, we basically have 8 weeks, let's call it, March, April, no, call it 10 weeks, 10, 11 weeks. We have 10, 11 weeks until everybody meets in St. Petersburg. I expect Vladimir Putin will be there choking people out along with Alexander Karelin. But,
well, what I want to see is I don't know why we as a wrestling community aren't doing something like, beat the streets that we did in Moscow or that we did in Times Square. Why aren't we in St. Petersburg hosting a big international wrestling dual meet, you know, world versus world dual meet right in front of the damn hotel where those international Olympic people are staying? You know, you can find out where they're going to stay. Let's stage a match, right?
Well, you definitely know where they're going to meet, so you could at least do that.
Well, you could know where they're going to stay too. It's not going to be hard to find that out.
Yeah.
Let's go through a wrestling match. I mean, we're talking, this is Russia here, you know, like
people show up.
This isn't even thinking outside the box. You know, especially if we're saving Olympic wrestling, let's put on a show for these Olympic people. I mean, that's going to get to them.
So that's one of the things we can do right there at the end, or let's host a beat the streets type event. Let's hope for a national or a world audience. I mean, maybe just invite the 20 best wrestlers and have a, you know, whatever. Maybe not the 20, maybe the 15 or 14 best wrestlers. But what are some benchmarks that listeners should look for to make sure that we know that we're progressing in the right way? Over the next few weeks, what are some things that you think might pop up that are like, all right, now we're doing the right thing? Is there going to be a full feat? Like, for example, is there going to be a full meeting of – is there going to be another vote from FILA, or are they going to keep the interim president for the next 8 weeks, you figure?
I think they're going to keep the president for the next 8 weeks, and right after that meeting with the International Olympic Committee, I think FILA is going to hold another meeting, and that's when they're going to, I think, elect a full-time president.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's in May. You know, in the time being, you know, with the World Cup, all three styles coming up, you know, obviously women, Greco, and freestyle, we have, you know, different 10 teams that are going to be competing at these World Cups. You know, so it's going to be a good opportunity for FILA and the heads of all these nations and the coaches from all these nations to get together. You know, I'm expecting once I get to Iran, you know, tomorrow after we work out and get our guys situated, that we're going to have to go meet and we're going to have to go sit in meetings and you know, talk this out and, you know, devise a plan, you know, how we could, you know, get the sport together from South America, North America, Europe, Asia, Africa, you know, even Australia. You know, we're going to have to throw all our, you know, cards in the same hat and just see how it plays out. But right now, you know, just, I would say, you know, just keep updated by, you know, the mat.com. And, you know, we have a great group of you know, former wrestlers who are, you know, leading the charge that have been very successful in the business world. And, you know, they don't want to see it go and, you know, they're used to getting their way. So,
but do you think this, but you just mentioned this is the, you know, the people in the business world. One of the last things I wanted to talk about, and then I'll let you go pack and, prepare for this flight is, you know, is this another shakedown? Is this like an Arizona State Lisa Love shakedown? Do you think
that's what I asked Zeke the same question like 2 days ago when he got here. 3 days ago, I asked him, is this exactly what they did to Arizona State? Are they shaking us down as a sport, you know, to get what they want from us? And, you know, to be honest, it kind of, to me, it feels like that's the way it is. Because, I mean, I'm obviously subjective because I'm in the sport and I love the sport and I've done the sport my whole life. But like I said, and you said, look at the overwhelming support we have from outsiders that can't believe that this is happening to one of the original sports in the Olympics. I mean, to me, it definitely looks like a shakedown.
Yeah.
You know, that want to get something, you know, out of it.
What a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, man. Hey, well, good luck out there. Good luck to Team USA and everyone wrestling. And please, you know, let's be in touch in a couple of days and give us a recap of the World Cup and also kind of some of the conversations you had. We'll have you back on.
Okay, yeah, I'll. I don't know. I don't think Skype will work in Iran. But
yeah.
We leave the day after the World Cup and we'll get situated in Belarus. So I'll be able to call you that evening.
Sounds great, man. Definitely looking forward to it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, buddy.
Bye.
Bye.
I didn't take my fucking shoes off.
Our Ask a Lawyer section with Shane Cross. He wrestled at Stanford University, I believe, in the 70s, but I could be wrong. He's old, and he and I met first at the University of Virginia, where I was wrestling as an undergrad, and he was in law school. So, Shane Cross, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
All right,
my favorite podcast on the internet.
Well, it's because I pay you to say that. That's why.
Well, I know. It's true. I drive up to Wyoming a lot from Colorado, and I always listen to you and Brian. It feels like I'm just sitting around the living room, even though I don't get away in. It's very comforting.
It's very comforting to know you're part of the...
Just hanging out with old friends with you guys. Rip out of that report.
So to listeners, if the sound quality goes out, it's because Shane is a part-time cowboy, part-time lawyer. And
part-time rancher. We call it rancher.
No, you're just a cowboy. Aren't you a rodeo cowboy? Isn't it all the same?
Not so good at the rodeo.
It's all the same thing, right?
I'm not sure. I think they might take offense to me calling myself a rodeoer.
Well, I just remember there was one instance where you specified that the difference between being a rodeo cowboy and a rancher are quite different and that people can get offended pretty easily. So
yeah, that was another time in my life. I've settled down a little bit now. Just leaving the ranch, you had a big life change, Tim, that you may not have known about, which was my dog got pregnant.
Your dog?
I have a little Aussie Shepherd, and brought her back up here for Christmas. And our hired hand had a German Shepherd that snuck to jump the fence. We say we'll jump the fence out here in Wyoming. Just had a brand new baby boy, so.
What'd you name your dog? The new dog?
Wee Man.
Wee Man?
Yeah, kind of after Jackass.
I know, but I was hoping for something more timely, like Corellin or something.
It could change. It's subject to change, but it was C-sectioned out. It's premature, so it's so small that Wee Man kind of fit.
What about Tim Vanny? What about naming your dog Tim Vanny?
That would be perfect, actually. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, that's a small man. Remember that poster with him and Baumgartner?
Yes, I think I have it somewhere.
Was that a direct ripoff of Twins, or was Twins based on that poster?
I think the Vanny Baumgartner poster came first.
I think so too. I really do.
Yeah.
I wonder if they get royalties.
I wonder if Tim Vanny is offended that you're comparing him to Danny DeVito right now.
You mean the multi-million-dollar Emmy-winning and Oscar-nominated actor? I don't think Tim Vanny is okay with that.
I guess he wouldn't be. So it's more the portrayal of Twin. Although I don't remember how the movie ended. DeVito might have done something as a hero.
DeVito recently broke up with longtime wife Rhea Perlman.
I did not know this.
So who sleeps with Danny DeVito at the bar? I guess that becomes the real question, is what chick at the bar is like, I'm going to make my statement on this planet, and I'm going to be rebound sex for Danny DeVito, Penguin.
Right. I think there'd probably be a lot of takers.
Why did Penguin bleed green in the Batman movies if he was human?
That's a good question.
I was asking because I thought you might have an answer for me, but...
My pop culture's way in the tank compared to what you're usually used to on this show.
Well, I think it's interesting as well that a lot of people probably don't know this, but you are actually a member of, I don't know how to say this, you're a U.S. team member, but not in wrestling, but in grappling.
Right.
You are the 2-time defending U.S. representative at what kilo?
I guess 80 kilos in 2011, and then like 76, I think it was this year.
Oh my gosh, you made 76?
I made 76, my first time since college. Surprisingly, eating right and working out works. I haven't tried that in a long time.
So
surprisingly how well it worked.
So for anybody,
Turkey just sent a shot across the bow on Facebook. I said he's coming to take the spot, so.
His no-gi game's pretty pathetic. I don't think you'll have much problem with him.
I don't know. He's got a little competitive streak.
He is a brown belt, and his gi game's pretty tight. You know, he's got all those little tricks and stuff, but he's not aggressive. He's not aggressive enough for no-gi. Yeah.
Can he go hard for 5?
I mean, probably, but I mean, if that becomes the issue, if you want the spot, then I'll just enter the bracket and beat him, and then just. I would crush him.
I would actually prefer that because it's going to be tough to live down. It's just Turkey that beats me.
Right. Well, then I'll just go ahead and allow you to take over the spot, and I won't even challenge you.
There you go. Just forfeit in the finals. That would be perfect.
Perfect. It's all working out just like we planned. So,
are you guys still down for this thing, though? By the way,
for the what?
For the World Team Trials. And it was the same weekend as the U.S. Open this year. So it probably will be a good turnout.
No, I don't think so. I think my days of trying to compete with the kids might be passing me by.
I think it's mostly older kids now.
Yeah.
Turkey will be kind of in the prime age there.
Yeah, I guess Turkey's my age. I guess so. It's probably the same, but... I prefer to compete in traditional wrestling tournaments in country.
Right.
Right.
How did that go? Are you? Did you post any videos yet? Do we have any access to this?
We have some videos that are coming up. I have to postpone my my article about specifically what happened in India with videos and photos until next week because, thankfully, for a writer, I'm swamped, so I need to kind of catch up and get my assignments in. And then write the more vanity type pieces.
Right.
But I'm going to.
There was a little spoiler in one of your articles, though, because I saw you with both hands raised.
I do win. But
both hands raised.
I do win, and that would be the climax of the article. But the falling action in the piece will probably be the more impressive.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
So you're a smart guy on occasion, you say some smart things. You're a great storyteller, and when we get a better connection, I'm going to ask you to tell stories in a future podcast, but give me some of your take on what you think's going on with the IOC, FILA. Start talking.
Yeah, it's a tough one to talk about sometimes publicly because I have a lot of different theories. But I guess...
When you say theories, you have different theories on how... On why, what the intentions were, or why they did it, or you mean just different thoughts in so many different places?
Yeah, different thoughts. You know, I just don't know. I'm not. I used to hear a lot of stories coming out. So, Chris Horpel is our coach at Stanford. He was fairly involved or deeply involved with FILA and IOC, and kind of knew the politics. And the things I heard about the way things operate were very unique. So, of course, I jump on conspiracy theories right away. But if you set that aside and look at it, I think there's a couple things that stand out to me. One, I'm not, and I think this has probably been said a lot, but I'm not sure that anybody really took it seriously, the threat of our sport being dropped. So I'm not sure how many people were actively in there lobbying or making sure that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Kind of blindsided us. Even though the day before it happened, I saw that on the math forums. Somebody had posted a little topic on it, and everybody kind of went, oh, that's just a footnote in the LA Times article. It's not really going to happen. And the very next morning, of course, people were texting me early, and you were the first one I reached out to cry with.
It's heartbreaking in so many different reasons, and one of the things is the whole world is consumed by the idea of profitability and then also politicking, you know, this, like, bullshit power, you know, extracting power from your bullshit political stances. And,
right.
And these, like, pseudo, like I said, like, it's a pseudo-diplomatic organization that wields power given to it by other pseudo-diplomatic organizations. And the problem, one of the fundamental problems, is that there aren't a lot of good minds, because really the only people who can be part of this are those who are independently wealthy. Now, Americans who get involved in this, like guys like Stan, and then also now with Batman's brother, why am I blanking? Jim Shear. These guys have made money on the finance side of it and decided that they're still going to dedicate their time in life to wrestling. That's not really how most of these countries pick their Olympic Committee representatives. It's just not the way they go. The people who make the money are the people who need jobs in sort of like patronage positions. You know, these are people who don't have skills outside of being bullshit artists. I love that word.
So that was the question I had you can answer. When I looked at the list of the IOC reps, one of the lists had like brackets and then sports. Are those the sports that the country is most associated with, or are these IOC members, do they always come from a governing body for a sport?
That's a good question. I wish you'd asked me beforehand. I would have checked into that. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, I think, you're spot on with the politics and how that works. And then I think to not go completely into the conspiracy theory, I think that we have shot ourselves in the foot a little bit with the watchability of wrestling, unfortunately. For you and I, it's still very watchable. But for somebody else trying to understand it, I think it has become pretty difficult.
I mean, I think one of the things that happened earlier in this podcast, when I was talking to Andy Rovat, and he made a lot of good points. He's very passionate. He's on the World Cup coaching squad this year. And when it comes down to it, like, freestyle, I think, is – I kind of like it. Freestyle is exciting. It always has action. If somebody gets pushed out, then the other guy's going to push hard. And for what it's worth, freestyle is a collaboration of traditional styles from around the world, whether it's Indian Kushti, American folk style, you know, collar and elbow, Cumberland style. These all have originally had influences on the style that was to become freestyle. And then Greco was probably more in line with what was one singular tradition that extended back centuries. But his recommendation was look at Greco and turn it into that 8 or 9 minute match. Because what happens is in Greco, when you have these quick matches, there's no exhaustion, and exhaustion leads to openings in positioning in Greco, and that leads to big throws, and that leads to points, and that leads to comebacks, and basically you're more like you're more willing to see an up and down athletic endeavor in a long match. You know, something like a 9 minute match is much more in tune with soccer or something, where there's ebbs and flows and there's changes in leads. I think freestyle can deal without that, but I think he made a good point. I think that's probably something that Greco could do.
I think that's fair. Do you think the freestyle action has been increased by the rule changes? And the reason I ask is if I go back and watch videos of John Smith scrapping, I didn't think there was any lack of action back then.
No, not at all. But that was also John Smith you were watching.
Well, that's true. And the ones you tend to watch on YouTube are the most exciting ones.
All right.
So, but I guess I would tend to agree with you. I do think the push-out rule, and it's just hard to understand. It's hard to understand how somebody wins a 1-1 period. It's also hard to understand when somebody's outscored 10-4 to win the match.
Right.
Like those types of things. Although the action has increased, and that's great, it's hard for the guy sitting on the couch to, I guess, to get into it because they're not quite sure what's happening.
Well, I think also, I think the mistake that we make is trying to say that, like, we should appeal to the guy on the couch. We should appeal to more guys on the couch. But we'll never be the sport. I mean, if you look at any sport anywhere in the world, wrestling is not, it's just never going to be, it might be the national sport in some countries, but, you know, from my experience, it's pretty much the same argument made over and over again, whether it's Mongolia, Senegal, or, you know, wherever, even if it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's the same argument made over and over and over again. Some people are just not going to be entertained by human form. They need balls. They need distraction. We live in an ADD, attention-hungry society. And a lot of times what attracts people to sporting events are the things that surround it. Now, I'm not saying let's give up on the show, but let's understand that we are who we are, to quote Dennis Green. Yeah. We are who they thought they were. And we need to make sure that we become more of that, not less of that. I think when you start pulling away from it and start trying to add in different things, you start losing your identity. And that's what makes it difficult. You know, I don't think this is a matter of rule changes. I know what's what everybody keeps saying, but our numbers, while not perfect, are pretty good. And with a recommitment and with all of the attention getting put on this, I don't know. I just think I think we're fine. I think we were always fine. I don't think we needed to do more or less. I think we just needed to keep growing at the same pace. I just don't, you know.
I guess three things then. So on the front end, when you say we are what we are and we don't necessarily need to appeal to the man on the couch, I'm thinking, I understand that. I'm thinking of it from an Olympic perspective only. Like, this is a sport where once every 4 years, for whatever reason, we get into a lot of different sports that we don't generally watch. And I don't know why now, but the storylines and the coverage of wrestling on the nightly broadcast are not there. And I'm getting into, you know, every 4 years, I'm getting into sports that I wouldn't think about watching. They may have balls, they may not, but I'll still watch it because it's appealing. Right. And I think the main, that we've lost some of that because it's harder to create the compelling storylines when people don't understand what they're watching. And so that's where I'm coming from with, like, and I don't know if that's one of the reasons that the IOC dropped it, is that the sponsors are not getting behind it because they can't really get the viewership for it during the Olympic broadcast. Whereas, you know, we can get into, I mean, we kind of get into ping pong, table tennis a little bit.
Yeah.
Every 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. And there's part of it is still that there's so many different people to, I mean, you're following Li Ning or whoever, that's the person who makes the shoes for ping pong, but if you're following, you know, the big ping pong girl from China or whatever, it's easy. That's one person who's going to get you into the sport. Wrestling's just always been there, and I think a lot of people kind of just accept it, and they don't necessarily look at it. But coming into next cycle, you're going to have two Americans who are likely going to have two Americans who are defending, and you're going to have, you know, the option of is America going to win? There's a lot of good storylines. The point is, I don't buy for one second. I'm disappointed that when I read even, I don't know what his name is, the Estonian, the Latvian, who's the new FILA president, I was disturbed when he was like, we're going to do everything we can to make sure, like, you know, that we take the IOC's recommendations or whatever and listen to what they want. It's like, look, part of that, yeah, sure, whatever, play the game. But the other part of it is, you know what? No. Suck it. You guys have the worst PR of any international body. I mean, FIFA does better than you. And soccer is people are crazy about soccer, but FIFA has way better PR than you guys. You obviously took bribes throughout tons of different processes. You know, what we should do is just say, hey, look, the world's against you. You reinstate us now, or by the rules that we set, or we continue trumping this. We continue hammering you guys on this. I don't know why we don't stick up for ourselves and say, look, we are a valued asset for no other reason than the fact that you've stepped in a big pile of PR shit when you tried to mess with us.
And I think that has a lot of merit, because one thing I've noticed, you probably noticed the same thing, and it's actually what you're saying, is there's so many people that don't watch wrestling and don't necessarily care about it, they're kind of pissed at this decision.
Because it's a loss of identity. It's a loss of, like, human identity. Like, I don't want to watch another stupid, contrived sporting event. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't relate to my life. I know wrestlers. I know wrestling. I don't know a single person who's ever entered into a competitive trampoline match.
Right. Dan Millman.
Hmm?
Dan Millman.
Okay, now I know.
We're the Beautiful Warrior. Great book, great movie. A lot of transfer to wrestling.
Yeah.
But you're right. I see that. And it's like, so I work in conservation, and I came up with the analogy that, like you probably don't go to wilderness areas a lot. Like, a lot of what we're doing is fight for protection of certain wild places. And there's a lot of folks who will never go to a wilderness area because of access problems. But it's comforting to know it's there, and that places like that exist. And I've kind of seen that sentiment with wrestling. Is they may not watch it, and it may not be something that they're really into, but as an Olympic event, it's kind of critical to the integrity of the games to have it in there.
Right.
Whether or not it is on that broadcast. So
That's a really good point. This is why we brought you on, so that you could be smart and in a Western twang tell us things that we didn't know.
Well, I don't know if smart's in there, but I do think that's a lot when I was listening to radio shows, a lot of folks that would call in kind of have that sense. Like, they don't necessarily need to watch it, but, and I don't even watch track, even though it's one of the cooler events in the Olympics, because I get bored by watching people run. But
I read somewhere recently.
I don't know that I would watch the Olympics or give them any credibility if the track went out. It's kind of the same thing with wrestling.
Exactly.
You need to be in there to have integrity.
I think that they have so many track events. It's like, oh, you ran in a straight line for 50 yards. Oh, now you did it for 100. Now you did it for 200, 400. It's like all these different lengths. It's like, great, it's the same thing over and over again. And,
yeah.
But at the same time, running and swimming and wrestling are just these three, like, I think the word I'm going to use is, like, endemic. Like, things that are naturally part of our human condition. Like, if left alone on an island with no, with nothing to sort of influence our decisions, we would choose to run, we would choose to swim, and we would naturally wrestle. It's just part of our animalistic tendencies, but that doesn't, animalistic does not necessarily mean violent. Just a way of is a way of sharpening yourself with others, creating social standings, and I think I don't know. I think everyone has the same thoughts at this point. So we only have another 30 seconds here, but you know what we'll talk about here. We're going to do two podcasts this week. We'll probably have you back on. So what I want you to think about, Shane, Dr. Cross.
Yeah.
I want you to think about three events that we can do, and then, or at least come up with one or two events that we can do before May 8th or even on May 8th that could be worldwide press events. Things that would generate a worldwide press event. What could we do?
All right. We'll start thinking.
I think you should uncork a bottle of Jack Daniels or whatever beverage you choose, and let the good times roll. See what comes out.
Well, all right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Hey, Shane. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right. We'll talk with you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Best Brian Muir is back again. Brian.
Yo, yo.
I thought you were out. I thought yesterday you were out. You were so sick. You were sniveling. It sounded like you didn't want to show up to a job. You were giving
down and out.
You're
down out, man.
Yeah, you're giving me the old, I'm so sick. All that nonsense.
you're acting like I'm calling out of a job. This isn't a job, mind you.
Well, you're a one percenter. This is the hobby that becomes your job.
Luckily, President's Day, my real job, I had off. So otherwise, yeah, I don't think I've been that sick in like 5 years. I'm still recovering.
Are you?
I can tell by my voice, but it was a rough go.
It was the flu?
I would imagine it was what they call the flu, yeah.
So now this is interesting. You and I haven't really talked since I went to India 2 weeks ago. So this is sort of – it's all fresh and new. It's all fresh
and new.
It's like when you start dating a girl in college and then you're like, oh, she likes me so much. And then you don't talk to her for a few weeks. She disappears. But then she calls you, and you're so excited. That's basically how I think you feel right now.
I feel like we've crossed the same paths as other people, but we haven't crossed each other's path in a while. Like, I've seen some jiu-jitsu guys that have seen you, but I haven't seen you.
Oh, that's true. I went to a restaurant opening. So
yeah, I'm the one percenter, huh? You got grand openings with big-time chefs and clubbing it up.
Brian, let's not ruin my image as being a man of the people.
I'm sure that's why you went. How was it?
It was good. I thought the food was on point. There was all you could drink. It was free drinking, and people were drinking. Like, there were people ordering, like, bottles of wine, shots of Jack. I was like, this is getting crazy. And I'm talking about 600 people doing that. And so I was in no spot to want to do that. I was still suffering from what we politely refer to as deli belly. I mean, I was messed up pretty bad. So I didn't really have the heart or the stomach to get involved in drinking.
Yeah. Was it a pretty good crew there? A lot of the jiu-jitsu guys?
Yeah, well, for reference to the people who don't know all the restaurant openings going on in Chicago this week, it was the restaurant opening of Siena Tavern, which is the new restaurant of Fabio Viviani, who is sort of like a celebrity chef. He was on Top Chef, well-liked Italian guy, and he opened up a restaurant with one of our jiu-jitsu friends who owns two really popular restaurants in Chicago. And this is – well, they're both sort of bars, and this is sort of a bit of a departure from that. This is more of a sit-down restaurant. But, it was good. It was good. I mean, I don't have really many critiques. I mean, they just kind of kept feeding you food and giving you booze.
It's tough to screw that up.
It is tough. Well, I don't know. I thought some of the pizzas could have been crisper, and since that's what they do, that concerns me. But they were like thin crust pizzas in small orders, and so when you took them off the plate, like the end of the wedge sort of wilted. I never liked that. I never liked that.
Yeah, the next day it was all posted on Facebook. Everybody had a great time at the grand opening of Siena Tavern. I didn't get the show. I was nice and sick up in my bed.
I'm sorry, Brian.
Post after post. No, it's cool. You could have at least brought me some chicken soup and leftover pizza or something. But
I could have. I have my own life, my own issues. This whole IOC thing, it's just been heartbreaking.
Tough. So you found out, were you back? You were still in India when you found out, right?
I just landed from India. It's a 6-hour flight from India to Singapore. So taxi and then flight and then taxi in Singapore. And I got to the apartment and it was like 4 or 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock there. And it's about 12 hours ahead. So I started working on a piece, and then about 9 o'clock, I started getting the text messages or started seeing stuff online about it. And I was like, you know what? I want to write a reactionary piece because I knew there would be obviously a lot of room for people to write about this. So I start hammering at the keys, and I'm like hammering. I'm going. I'm like, all right, so let me see what I want to say. Like, what do we know? What do we say? Like, what do we report? You know, I'm getting more amped up and more amped up. And I was like, all right, well, I got to take a shower. I was just on a plane with just nasty diseases for that long. So I went to go take a shower. I got out of the shower, and I'm not kidding you, like a lightning bolt from Zeus, I was hit with sickness. Like I like literally crumbled onto the floor with a fever. I couldn't move. I was shaking so much. Like I was just holding myself, shaking. Yeah. And then that's when the whole more the belly stuff started. But it's not even that. It was more the fever and the feelings of confusion. And then, to be honest with you, let's break it down. We're all men here. I was scared. There was no roommate there. My friend wasn't there at the apartment, and his roommate wasn't there. So it was just me by myself. And although it's Singapore, it's a foreign country, I don't know where the hospital is. I had to Google how to dial 911. Like I didn't know like how sick I was. I could have had anything from. I could have.
It is scary. That happened to me in Thailand actually, and they prep you when you go in about dengue fever and malaria and all that stuff. So the first thought you get is that
you have dengue fever.
I'm going down. This is it.
Well, I started thinking, like, this is how fucking Andy Irons died. Excuse my language. But, like, I'm basically, you know, he didn't really die of that. But, you know, like, remember the thing was he died in that hotel room of dengue fever because...
Yeah.
But, like, I started thinking, like, man, do I have Japanese encephalitis? I know it. This is crazy. I was at a wrestling tournament, and I shake hands with one of his coach's wrestlers. And I was like, oh, why isn't she wrestling today? I'm not kidding you. His response was, oh, she has typhoid. I was like, oh, man, come on. I just shook her hand. Why'd you let me shake her hand? I have my typhoid shot, so I wasn't too concerned. But, yeah, you start thinking Japanese encephalitis. You start thinking all these different things.
Yeah, it's not cool to get that type of sick overseas.
No, and having a girlfriend that's a doctor is awesome, but not really when she's not at your person, you know? Then she just became super worried. I got her dad trying to FaceTime me. He's like reading books on typhoid. It was not good. I'm honestly, dude, I haven't been that sick in, I don't know if I've ever been that sick. I was scary sick.
Jeez. Yeah, the last time I was sick before this was that. I didn't know if it was food poisoning or it ended up being food poisoning, I guess. But it lasted for like 48 hours, the most intense, painful sickness I've ever had. You're in cold sweats.
Do you think it gets worse as we get older? Like, I mean, is it like sort of like one of those things like where you can't recover as well after drinking? Maybe like when you get sick, you just get sicker because you're older. Like you're not sort of in your prime, like in your mid 20s.
Yeah, maybe it's probably got something to do with it.
I think also just
back as quickly.
Yeah, I think also just being the drug, not the drugs, but the illnesses that you sort of encounter overseas sometimes are just a little bit more badass, possibly.
Like a little more foreign. You're not used to it?
Yeah, of course. So, I recovered from that.
Massey came out to Thailand when I was over there. Yeah, I was in my bed for literally like 48 hours straight, just sweating. Bad nightmares. Just throwing up the whole ordeal. Bad.
I'll tell you how much this Fila thing affected me, or the IOC thing affected me. So, I'm in there, and the only thing I have is guilt. Like, mind you, I have no fewer than 20,000 words to produce as it is. Over the coming week, and I'm sitting here and I feel guilt because I'm sick. Like, I can't get my work done. And as a self-employed guy, you know, it's like you eat what you kill, and if you're not killing, you're not eating. So it's like just watching money, you know, disappear from my life. So I'm like trying to feel like I'm getting better. And then, like, in that weird feverish thing, I was thinking so much about the IOC thing. I had convinced myself that I had solved. I solved how to get it back into 2020, but every time I sort of started coming out of like my fever dream, I kept forgetting what it was or how I solved it. You know, does that make sense? Like in my dreams,
yeah.
I figured
it
out, and I was like, "Well, I figured it out, so we're all good now." And then I wake up and I'm like, "Oh man, what was it? How did I figure it out?" I don't know.
Are you sure you didn't eat some bad red licorice over there?
Red licorice.
You eat some bad food, maybe?
No, I the last day there, I did some wrestling, and there was water poured over my head to wash me, and some of it just ended up in my mouth, I think.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's going to do it.
It was well water, and it might not even have been that. It could have been earlier in the day, but I didn't eat any stands or anything, but you just don't know. It could have been anything.
Yeah, something tells me, like, getting into that situation, wrestling in India, in an Indian dirt pit, your chances are probably going to multiply a little bit getting something.
Absolutely. So, anyways, I think it all served for the better. I think what ended up happening was I ended up being like the second day of responses as far as, you know, like everybody's initial shock, anger, you know, these sort of like letters to the IOC or FILA that people want to write. And then I think I wrote mine on Friday. Mine got out on Friday.
Yeah.
And it was the largest, it was the largest amateur wrestling art.
Some great response. I saw most of it online.
Yeah, it was 4,000 Facebook likes. That's
a lot of likes.
That's a new record for amateur wrestling there.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so I mean, I think a little bit. I mean, I think as a writer, it's always good to see sort of what you write validated. But that really all you're doing is it's sort of like a circle. Like all I'm really doing is validating what you're thinking. Yeah, some of that is. You know, particular situations that maybe other people haven't been in, but at the same time, I think it was the anger that people sort of associated with. So I was happy professionally to see the article do that well, and it's prompted me to do
in a weird way, I feel like this whole thing kind of legitimizes the travels you've done,
yeah,
you know, work you've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not legitimizes, but brings it to a place where you can at least show like how valuable it is.
Yeah, I think this is not an argument that would have been. I don't think it's an argument that could have been brought up previously with any expertise or brought to any larger public light. I think when people offhandedly would say like, "Oh, people wrestle in every country," that I don't think the American audience would necessarily understand that they mean traditionally in addition to Olympic. And I don't think they understand how they're all webbed together. So yeah. I think, yeah. And so now I'm, you know, if I wasn't already, then I've doubled down my efforts now with this, cause this was always going to be the capstone to the book, but now it'll be this plus, whatever ends up happening with the IOC stuff. So we're looking, I mean, I'm hammering the keys, trying to get this thing out as soon as possible, but never been happier to have waited because
No, this will bring it to a good ending. Well, hopefully a good ending, but
a good ending that ends on an uptick. Yeah, that ends with these jerks kind of getting what they feel like they deserve. You know what I'd really like to do? I'd like to get a ticket to two places. I'd like to get an airline ticket to Western Europe and find out who was on this board. And I'd like to go investigate their financials for the last 6 months. I want to see if there's been payment. I feel like this is a dream investigative journalism job for some guy living in Europe.
Well, it seems like it's just blatant that the IOC is paid off every cycle, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's huge corruption charges they're facing for the Olympics in Qatar or whatever that is. Or was that World Cup?
I'm not sure.
That might have been the World Cup. But yeah, they're always under investigation.
Just from listening to John Smith's interview, did you hear that?
No, what did he say?
He kind of went through the IOC a little bit, and he was like, "There's not only is there no wrestling representation, there's not really a whole lot of American representation." He's like, "We lead the medal count pretty much every Olympics, and there's barely an American presence on the IOC."
Really?
Yeah.
See, I always thought it worked like the United Nations, where there was like one.
That's what I thought. Like, you get, you know, a certain amount of representatives per country, but I don't think it is.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I always think that
seeing the backlash from the general public, not even, you know, let alone people that have wrestled their whole lives, but even the general public where the backlash is coming back, I can't see this sticking.
It would take
so dumbfounded by it.
It would take intellectual. It would take institutional narcissism like we've never seen before. But then again, like that's what they're known for. They're known for staring down the public opinion and being like, I don't know. This is probably their worst. This is certainly their worst PR crisis. And I would hope that they would look at it and say, all right, well, maybe we don't want to keep pushing this forward. And then, you know, it's not even the committee members changing their mind. It's the IOC at large saying, okay, you guys, we tried to do this core sports thing. It was this big idea. There's a lot of money invested in doing this. But at the same time, we need to repair, you know, because a lot of these people, their whole career is built on being this IOC member. Like, this is their validation for being human. And if it has a bad reputation, then they have a bad reputation. If they're answering questions about wrestling all the time, and that just sort of invalidates all the work that they've done. So now that they can correct themselves and they can muster up some more support for, you know, they can become relevant again or popular again, I think, by reinstating the sport.
Just seems like they didn't look at any facts whatsoever.
No.
They just kind of threw a dart at a board and were like, all right, wrestling, yep, you're out.
I mean, it's a money game. It's the same idea. We talked earlier in the podcast. Talked to Andy Rovat and Shane Cross. But
is that right?
Yeah.
Andy Cross is up.
Yeah, we're thinking about making him replace you. We don't deal with people who take sick days, unless you want to get a union to support you, Brian. That's how it's going to be.
But the contract I signed was for Tuesdays, and this is Tuesday.
Yeah, I just felt bad because I didn't do one last week. You know, Andy Rovat has his ideas. Shane Cross has it. Everybody has their ideas, and we have to keep going with it. I think it's just going to end up being pressure. Some of it's going to be politics. But the biggest mistake we can make is thinking that there's something fundamentally wrong with wrestling. Like, look, it's not a ball sport. It's not going to be for everybody, but that's okay. And that's the position you have to keep taking with them. It's like, we're going to keep trying to make it popular. We're going to try to bring our sponsorships in. You can see that we're trending well. But we're not going to change this. What do you want to add? A fucking basketball to the thing? Like, it's not going to change. Like, wrestling is...
I mean, that's why it belongs. That's why it belongs, is because you don't need a ball. You need basically a flat surface and two willing participants, and that's it, you know?
Exactly. It's the basis for which all other sports are rooted, and yet we can't get the respect to do the one thing in the one place that it should always have been. It should be in amateur athletics. It doesn't have a place. This, or as Donald Rumsfeld called them, the Kumbaya Olympics. Like, this whole idea that, like, we want to include random sports so we can include random countries. What about the sport that includes, you know, has 171 participating nations overall in the world championships, or what, 127? You know, we had more medalists than modern pentathlon had participating countries.
Yeah, I saw that. I read all those little stats. That's what I mean. I can't think that they looked at any of those numbers before they made that decision.
Yeah. We could belabor this point, obviously. We'll see how it develops in the next few weeks. I think we're bringing together the brightest minds to help remedy the situation. I do have every intention of going to Russia in May to be at the meeting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go to Dagestan. And
I love the idea, or the picture I get in my head when I picture this thing going down in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And just the, like, how many Saitievs and Tirovs are just going to come from the countryside and just be utterly pissed off.
Busloads and trainloads of wrestlers are going to come up from Chechnya,
scary
Dagestan,
stuff.
From all those places. So yeah. I want to sort of be part of this in a way, documenting. I feel like it's a crazy dangerous place in the world, but I also feel like traveling with some people who are going to protect you from outside dangers. If they know that you're trying to get their story out, maybe they won't do anything bad to you. I don't know. But, yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's going to be a really interesting few days. So we'll see how it goes. Well, speaking of which, we just got the email from the NWCA, speaking of house cleaning and problems in your own house. So you've prepared for a discussion about the NWCA's...
Yeah, so we got,
and we get the brackets, and lo and behold, the number 8 seed is now number 7, and number 7 is now number 8. Of course, Illinois moving into
they pulled the old switcheroo on us.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so I had prepared, and I do a lot of preparation for this podcast, believe it or not, but I had prepared for Okie State Cornell and a rematch of Iowa Illinois, but again, they pulled the switcheroo. And it is Iowa Cornell, Oakland State, Illinois. Is that what I said first? Well, whatever it was, they switched around. So
well, that's what it is now. Illinois. They wanted to break up conference opponents. So that's the whole thing. It's like, if you're going to have a national tournament to decide the national champion, you can't just whimsically decide that, oh, well, they wrestled each other last week. Let's not have them wrestle each other this week.
Like, yeah, I disagree with it too. And on top of that, in my opinion, you get better individual matchups out of the way it should have been, where you get Okie State Cornell and Iowa Illinois. I think there's better individual matchups. So they may have also looked at Okie State has wrestled Cornell already. Iowa just wrestled Illinois. Maybe that went into it a little bit.
It did. It absolutely did. They wanted to separate conference opponents.
So it's a shame, small shame, but.
I mean, I think that there's a larger issue here that we shouldn't brush over, which is that they want to be legitimized as an organization that's going to provide this national tournament. You can't just hem and haw. Like, you can't say, like, well, let's have a national tournament that decides the national champion. Oh, wait, we're going to change the seeds. For what reason? Like,
wasn't it based on the coaches' poll?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. So did they change the – I didn't see the latest coaches
poll. No, they didn't change the coaches poll. They just changed
oh, that's pretty lame.
And they just went into the bracket and were like, oh, we're just going to switch 8 and 7. So there's no difference then. There's really nothing stopping them from changing 1 and 6. You know, if they don't want to change one number because it's convenient, you can change all the numbers. You know, so now...
Yeah, you can't do that.
You're establishing
gotta,
a terrible...
Give it where it landed.
Terrible precedent.
Plus, we would have got Dake Caldwell again. We would have got McDonough Delgado again.
Yeah.
So...
How about this? We would have had a tournament where there wasn't manipulation. I don't know.
I agree. What are you going to do? Too much bad news this week. We got to push through it.
Tell you what. So, who are your matchups?
All right. So, running down from first seed down to fourth seed, we got Okie State, Illinois. Was going to be Okie State, Cornell. They yanked Cornell through in Illinois. And, man, I don't know. What's the most intriguing individual matchup for you in this match? I don't really see a great one. Maybe 74, Blanton and Perry.
Yeah, it's a great matchup.
It's a good matchup. I wouldn't say it's a great matchup, but it's good.
Perry got majored. So who knows?
Perry did get majored by one guy.
Blanton can do anything at any time.
This is only blemish. Are you calling? I would not call for Blanton to win this match.
No, I wouldn't either.
Perry, although he'll keep it close. I think they've wrestled before and he's kept it close. I think he keeps it close against. But I think Perry is minus 3 points.
Perry is minus 3 points?
Yeah. 2.5, 3 in that range. I mean, Jordan Oliver has no trouble with Irving, although Irving's kind of funky and has given some guys some trouble. I don't think Jordan Oliver has any trouble. BJ Futrell, it's unclear if he's back. He's been out of the lineup. But if he's back, they could make it an interesting matchup. That could be a 9-point swing, but I'm going to say that Okie State is Illinois lost to Iowa by 13. Okie State beat Iowa. It doesn't always work like that, but I'm going to say Okie State is minus 12.5.
I'll take Illinois.
Taking Illinois?
Yeah.
I like
the Mark Perry coach team. The Mark Perry assisted coached team. That team's doing well. I don't know. I feel like they perform.
That team is doing well.
They kind of can. They can outperform it when they need to.
They're just shy of scratching into that upper echelon.
Right.
So.
Which is wild if you think back to like 4 years ago.
Yeah. Indeed. So, second seed Iowa. You know them. I know them. The Hawkeyes. We're going against Illinois. They slid Cornell in there. Yikes. Actually, Cornell, they've got a chance, not a great chance, but they've got a chance to win at 25, outside chance. They've got an outside chance to win at 41. Actually, I go as far as to say 41 might even be a toss-up with Nevinger and Ballwig.
Yeah. I like Nevinger because he can get nasty on top.
Yeah, I think he could ride Ballwig out maybe for a period. Although I watched him this weekend and he wasn't doing a whole lot from his feet, but yeah, that's kind of his style. He rides and tries to win by a point or so. So if they can somehow pull those matches off, which is a big if, they could keep this dual meet very close. But I do not see that happening. I've got Iowa minus 11.5.
Yeah, I like that side of it, too.
Cornell. And the one big match, the marquee match, if you will, is Nashawn Garrett and Matt McDonough. And I'm going to say McDonough. Actually, Garrett's been wrestling very well. Kind of came out of nowhere, off the radar. And I'm going to say he could be fired up enough to give McDonough a tough match coming off our weigh-ins. But McDonough has got to be the favorite. McDonough minus 2, I would say.
McDonough minus 2?
Yeah.
Take Garrett.
Taking Garrett? All right. I'll take McDonough to cover that.
Quick interlude here. Just released. USA Wrestling to host the 2015 World Wrestling Championships in Las Vegas.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Book my ticket. I'll be there.
Go ahead.
Be an interesting team, too. Very interesting team.
Yeah, who knows who's going to be on that team?
74 kilos alone. Crazy. All right, so moving on, we got number 3 seed Minnesota, right, against your boys, Virginia Tech.
Okay.
All right. Virginia Tech looked very strong on Saturday, I thought. They were in a barn burner with Oregon State, and they had to kind of grit it out, and they did, came back and got the win. And they kind of dominated the upper weights. That's not going to happen here. Minnesota's probably between 84. Their 97-pounder is good. He's not great, but their heavyweight is great. So they usually win that upper weight battle. I think they're going to win here again. They're going to sweep those last 3 weights. Actually, last 4 weights they're going to sweep. And Virginia Tech's not going to have enough firepower to stay with them, unfortunately. But they could take 25. They should take 57. They should take 65. If they can sneak 1 or 2 out, could be an interesting match. 149 is an interesting matchup. Bruschetta and Dylan Ness.
Okay.
Bruschetta is solid. He's a runner-up. Or no, he's a Midlands champ, right?
Yes. Not this year. Last year.
I thought it was this year.
Well, he definitely won last year. Maybe he won this year, too.
Him and Vincent split. I think Bruschetta won, and then Vincent came back and won. But
oh, no, Bruschetta won Midlands. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about 25.
No.
Yeah, Bruschetta won. And then he lost the very next match.
Well, Garnett won as well. I think they both won this year.
And then, yeah, and then he lost the very next match he wrestled. Bruschetta lost to Vincent.
Yeah. So I think this is when Ness, I think by Nationals, Ness has got it all together, and I think this is when he starts getting it going. I'm going to say that there might be some disagreement with this line, but I'm going to say that Dylan Ness is a 2-point favorite over Bruschetta. I think Bruschetta's straightforward. He's pretty solid, but Ness throws a hell of a lot at you.
Yeah, that's interesting because this would be the kind of test that Bruschetta needs to see if he's going to be able to hang on to NAA status at Nationals, because a guy like Ness can throw your whole tournament off. There's a few of them lingering out there at that weight. I would think that Ness would win by more than 2 if he wins, but if he loses, he's going to lose by more than 2. I think he's one of those sort of like...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think I could definitely conceive Bruschetta pulling off the upset, and it's kind of a minor upset, but yeah, I think Ness either opens it up or he loses by a point or something like that.
Right.
So, but I think the line's going to be Ness minus 2, and I'd like Ness to cover, actually. So,
okay.
We'll see if he's got it going. He's pushing for that number 2 spot in the country. That'd be nice if Oliver and Ness somehow meet this weekend. A couple maybe matchups this weekend. We could see some huge matchups. Minnesota, Virginia Tech, 125, Garnett, who is a Midlands champ as well, against Thorne. That's kind of a big matchup. Garnett, not far off from possibly placing very high at Nationals this year.
Yeah, he's a stud.
I mean, he's a contender. I don't want to say he's a favorite by any stretch of the imagination, but he's in there. He's got a win over Delgado. He's been wrestling tough all year. So I think he's a 1.5-point favorite over Thorne. That should be kind of a fun match.
Yeah, I mean, Thorne's not as – hasn't really done much as far as maybe what he was expected to do this year.
Right.
He's ranked like 13th. And Garnett's up at 5th.
Matchup. I think Garnett – it's in Minnesota, so you can see – maybe see some fireworks with this match, but yeah, Garnett's got to be the favorite.
Right.
So there you go. And for the dual meet, I'm going to say Minnesota's minus 7.
I'll take Virginia Tech.
Yeah, kind of
kind of went back and forth with this one. I think Minnesota is just too solid from 74 through
everywhere. Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that.
But Virginia Tech could sneak some matches here and there. They could win four matches for sure. So
it's close. Yeah, they're not going to win at 84. They're not going to win at. Their 84 is like weirdly tough to wrestle, but
yeah, I can't see him beating the Bear Jew. So I would take Minnesota to cover 7.
Cover, huh? That's so weird with these lines, though. Just one thing changes.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough.
Well, this is the opening wrestling weekend for America's new top ranked 174 pounder, Logan Storley.
Is that right?
Yeah, because he was top ranked last week, but they had the week off.
Yeah, I guess he would be top ranked. You'd have to give it to him. After Perry gets majored, I still haven't heard the story of why he got majored. But
I don't know. I think he ran into a better wrestler.
Any given day, right? And then the last matchup in the early round is 4 seed Ohio State, 5 seed Missouri. Barn burner.
I don't know, man. You're a dumb man if you bet against Missouri. You're crazy.
Well,
you're about to, aren't you?
I'm gonna take OSU.
Go ahead. Break that down, because 25, obviously Missouri's going to run through them. 33, obviously Ohio State's going to win.
Missouri has bookend studs. So they got studs at 125 and stud at heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
And they've got some good guys in the middle, but they don't have...
Well, I think 49's a toss-up. Obviously they're going to win 41 and 33.
49's a toss-up, but you have to give it to...
Sorry? Like he had a good win recently. I can't remember who it was over, but
yeah, he beat he just came off a win against Alton.
Right.
So maybe he's starting to get his head together. He's starting to get back into national form from last year.
57's a toss up.
57's a toss up, but man, Dimas has looked really good lately. I would give him the edge there. And then you got two Steavers in the middle that God knows what they're going to do.
Yeah, I guess there's probably a lot of bonus points.
Looking at 3 each. You know, you're looking at least one of them putting up bonus, if not both.
Right, there's a lot of bonus points floating around. Although, Nick Heflin is not going to have an easy time with that Todd Porter kid at 74.
Yeah, so the guy that we were just talking about that majored Perry is wrestling Heflin. But Heflin's another guy that looks like maybe he's got his weight under control and he's back wrestled well.
But then they win 84, they win heavyweight,
win heavyweight, they win 25.
They probably win 97. Brent Haynes, that kid can do anything.
Yeah, that's probably a toss-up.
That's probably tough. I don't know, man. I like Missouri because I'm afraid to bet against Sammy Hansen. Well, what's his name? Nick Marable just won the World Cup.
Over Sammy Hansen.
Did I read that right?
What's that?
Nick Marable, did he just do really well at the...
Yeah, he won...
He won gold?
Yep. And Varner lost to...
Yeah.
Win Michalak.
I'm pretty sure it's Mahalik, but yeah.
I'm always going to call it Michalak.
But that's cool, dude. Whatever you want to say. No, this was that other tournament. This was that that Bulgaria tournament. I guess he did that. Is that right?
Yeah, so they look good. Look good over there. Wrestling with a lot of pride to keep Olympic wrestling in the picture.
But that's a middleweight, you know, so you look at all those guys that have it, that upper weight. You always think of Sammy at the lower weights, but I don't know.
I just think they got too many individual studs, Ohio State.
Whatever, you're on the payroll.
We'll see. See how it shakes out. Ohio State, for now, is -3.
Okay, I'll take Missouri.
Okay.
Wait, so are you going to make any Oscar lines?
Is that this weekend?
I think so.
Dude, I've been so out of the loop. First of all, I don't have cable. Second of all, I've been stuck in my bed in cold sweats for the last 72 hours, so I haven't really looked at it. Off the top of my head, What's his, your boy's winning for sure?
DDL?
Yep.
Yeah, I just saw that movie on the plane.
Yeah, I just saw it too. It's pretty incredible. It's
pretty incredible what he does there.
You can't, you cannot hold with, withhold the Oscar from that guy.
No. I mean, I think that's one that everybody kind of agrees on at this point.
Yeah, so he wins. Man. Best Picture? Probably, is Zero Dark Thirty up?
Best Picture nominees. Amor, Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Mis, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty. The statistical favorite to win across the board, big time, is Argo.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Argo cleaned up at the last one, I believe.
Best Actor, do you want to hear the odds for DDL?
Here's a fact about the Oscars, is that they're not going to give it to Tarantino.
Fact?
It's a fact.
Why?
He's just never won it before. And he's not going to win it for Django.
Best Actress. Who do you think the... interesting. The favorite to win Best Actress is... Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence.
From Silver Linings Playbook. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Dude, I just saw it two nights ago. It's fantastic.
Doesn't it have something to do with the Eagles?
Vaguely, yes.
Well, you can admit it if it does.
It does. Right. Best Director. Vegas thinks it's going to go to Spielberg. He's laying 600.
Really? I would bet against that.
Best Supporting Actor is probably the tightest race. Christopher Waltz and Tommy Lee Jones are both -110. Bobby D's plus a grand. Alan Arkin's plus 2,500. But I didn't see I don't think his role in Argo was probably big enough to support that. So, and then Best Supporting Actress, I don't have it. So, well, maybe we can do one in a couple days, and you can do one before the tournament.
I'll throw them up on Twitter, maybe.
Yeah, let's do a little Twitter, a little Tumblr.
I'm over 100 followers.
Woohoo!
It took me a lot longer than I thought.
We'll have a Twitter party for you, Brian.
There you go.
All right, thanks for your time, man. I hope you feel better.
Yeah, buddy.
Wrestling forever.
By the way, I'm taking Iowa to win the whole thing, and once we get through the first rounds, I'll throw some lines on Twitter as well.
Okay, Twitter, Twitter, Twitter. And let's do some Tumblr action, too. Sounds good.